I gotta get two more pieces of plumbing to do. Then we'll be done with all of the stuff that's base cabinet related. But we have some, the upper cabinets won't go in until January. We have the shelves up now that we'll use all that, but at least be able to pump.
We won't have a 5 foot long commercial bar, it's just prayer was plugged in the living room.
It is, still is.
She was going a little crazy.
And not just that, it's the old fridge, so we have a new fridge in the right spot, not plugged in. We have an old fridge in the living room.
You guys are renting the whole place, huh? You didn't sell it.
Yeah, we're renting it. So far, so good. They paid all the rent on time.
Oh, sure.
Is this your first experience?
Always ready for the disaster there.
You're pushing further, aren't you guys?
That's right. Oh. Okay, that's a good idea.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never care.
I was always the back row student.
It is funny how people sort of go to the same spot.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Oh, I got it.
It does look like a pretty heavy meter. But we're leaning towards making it. Yeah.
No, it's just regions.
But there were a couple comments.
Were they?
Who's that? Oh, I just my mouth down. Is that the normal state?
Oh, I mean, on the. Well, I don't know if you want 20 emails in
here. Right, you do the digest
thing,
so you can do the digest
everything.
It's full and stuck. Yes. Or
incomplete.
Yeah, people get their names on
we
both.
We have a meeting on Wednesday.
We need to change the wording, but that's the intent.
True, we do.
It wasn't clear. My guess would be
the way around. The reason is exactly what you're thinking.
Yeah, I'll just get you to
know. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, it's been approved, and it's thinking it's very, that's all good. Right.
Yeah. That's just busy. I sent Susan a big spreadsheet that they're like for the departments to contact.
Yeah.
Regarding some of the.
Okay.
Okay, I'll forward that to you too.
Yeah, Rayner was the one who, when I asked,
yeah.
I asked that exact question. What about? No, that's no problem. That's synchronous. We're only talking about asynchronous.
That's true.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It should be.
Yeah. People
who
clearly don't do it don't
realize. Yeah, it's kind of like,
yeah.
Sure.
I'm
looking.
A little
far,
but where are you
sensing? The spirit of the whole thing. I mean, we have try to give the people who are at a distance the same experience.
Right.
Who's in case that's right.
But there is a
That that moves us in probably the rest of our direction.
Great work. No, I basically walked up and down the hall and started pulling crystals, and people are like, "Why?"
Right, exactly. It provides a huge disincentive to.
Yeah,
it's not.
Okay. I have a
thing that would help.
Oh, I read that.
Okay. Yeah, really.
That was supposed to be my inside voice. Perfect understanding.
I don't mean
can't
you
come
here for the port?
Sorry, this is.
Oh yeah.
What?
That's the last.
We definitely have a call.
Go ahead, take one. You ready?
Oh, I almost went to the
hall. Hello, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call this meeting. This is UAF Faculty Senate Meeting 178. And so anybody who is not here for Faculty Senate, you're in the wrong meeting and run. So first off, we'd like to start with a roll call. Jane, could you please call roll?
Abramovich. Alexia, Aaron, Baker, Bondopal, Barbosa, anybody here for Perry, Bret Hart, Brown,
here,
online, thank you. Cahill?
Here.
Davis?
Here.
Okay. Fallon? Here. George Bettisworth?
Here.
Golux?
Here.
Okay. Gustafson?
Here.
Healy?
Here.
Henry?
Here.
Himmelblum?
Here.
Horstmann?
Here.
Jensen?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Jolie?
Here.
Jones?
Here.
Lardon? Anyone here for Cecile? Lawler?
Here.
Mathis?
Here.
McCackern?
Here.
Metzger?
Here.
Meyer? Oh, okay. Thank you, Gerhard. Moses?
Yes.
Nadine? Anyone here for Elizabeth? Newberry? Cheng Sang? Okay, Hui Zhang for Cheng Sang. Radenbo?
He's here.
Renis?
Here.
Reynolds? Short?
Here.
Weber?
Here.
Oh, Valentine?
Here.
Winfrey?
Here.
Zhang? Xiong, anyone here for Xiong? And acknowledge our ex officio folks here today, Jordan Titus. I thought
Jordan
I thought.
Jordan asked me to give the report today.
Oh, okay, thank you. Mike Ernest, here. Anyone here for staff counsel? Okay. How about ASUAS? We have Paul Lair.
Here.
And Anita Hartman. Susan Henricks is here. Okay, thank
and
you.
Maggie Griscavage is here.
Okay, and it's Maggie Griscavage. Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to the approval of the minutes for meeting 177. Does anyone have any issues with the meeting minutes? So, hearing none, I go ahead and approve the minutes. And you've all seen the agenda. Any issues or changes you would like to see on the agenda? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move on to the status of Chancellor's office actions. Given we happen to have no motions there, there were none approved and none pending. So quickest item in history takes us to President's remarks. Most of the things that I've been dealing with are actually on the agenda today under discussion items in terms of the strategic directions, stay on track, the master's degree ceremony, UAF mission statement, those sorts of issues. So I'm going to keep it really brief and just to policy and regulation review. The Board of Regents policy and regulations are, in the President's opinion, somewhat repetitive, hard to read, redundant, you know, all those other good things. And so he's asked various parts of the university to review the policy and regulations to suggest changes and to see where things aren't in alignment with the way things are done, with federal regulations, all those other things that could get us into trouble. So having said that, he went ahead and passed out chunks to all the different vice presidents. We as governance and as members of Faculty Alliance, Statewide Academic Council, got given the academic issues, but needless to say, that doesn't cover everything in policy and regs in terms of things that were identified as these are issues for faculty. There are a lot of other places in policy and reg where the items could impact faculty, but they weren't directly assigned to us. So Jennifer and I sat down, and the same thing is happening at UAA. UAS will be playing somewhat of a lesser role because they don't have quite as many folks to throw at the problem as we do. And divvied up policy and reg among your committees. So those of you who are on the administrative committee have gotten a spreadsheet with what sections of Board of Regents policy and regulations we have assigned to your committee, and we tried to make it relevant to your committee. So curricular affairs got things that were related to, well, the curriculum. And, you know, for faculty development, we tried to make sure that it was something that was applicable to you. So you've been given a few sections. Of course, you are welcome to look at anything you'd like inside policy and reg and send us your comments, but we've highlighted some that we really thought were kind of important. And what you're going to find is that we've basically given you an idea of what to do. Basically look through it and mark if sections are outdated, so they need to be deleted, if they're redundant,
if they are what we refer to as a landmine. A landmine is something that looks innocuous but could get us in trouble later. For example, federal regulations we are perfectly in compliance with in terms of our institutional review board. We are not, however, in compliance with Board of Regents policy, which is much stricter and could have an impact on any surveys you do in class, et cetera. So that's something where we need to highlight that this is a problem, we need to fix it. And it's an item, in some cases, landmine will be controversial and difficult to fix. And they're going to need special attention. It's not just a quick wording fix. So we want really to know about any of those. Then we're going to have ones that we are going to list as tweak, translation, a minor change will help, and then okay as is. Now with the tweak, you can suggest wording or you can suggest how we can deal with that issue. And then as is, of course, is pretty straightforward. So the object is for us to look at all of these sections from the point of view of faculty, which, you know, if the UAA, UAS, and UAF sentence weren't doing this, it really wouldn't have faculty eyes on the issues. Say what we think needs to be adjusted, how it needs to be adjusted, and then it will go into the grand mix of how do we recommend to the Board of Regents that maybe they change their policy. The regulations can be changed with just the president's approval. So really what we're trying to do is advise from a faculty point of view of what is acceptable, what isn't. So take a look at this, see if you see any problems, and we want to make sure that we get input basically together in spring to add into the process. And we're not the only ones doing this, so don't feel bad. Staff Alliance is looking at this. We have a bunch of the organizations at statewide, so Vice President for Academic Affairs' group is looking at academics, and we've got Human Resources looking at the HR parts. So it's a major process, and we really wanted to make sure that the faculty did play an important role because there are issues we face that may not be thought about by the administration. So you will have assignments when you go to your next committee meeting, and we apologize in advance. David?
So will the process be that each committee will make recommendations about how to change it, and then it will come to, say, the administrative committee to weave all those together into some sort of coherent body of suggested changes that then this body will vote on?
We really hadn't looked at the voting. What we were looking at was the changes, synthesizing them, and then basically sending them to UAA and to UAS to have them look at what we saw and see if it matches what they had, and basically try to come up with a unified faculty response across all three MAUs, and if they're not unified, basically say why not. So that was the way the process was going to go, is that the input's going to come from all three senates through Faculty Alliance as a unified faculty voice. We're much stronger when we come across that way. Any other questions? Okay, that was all I had for my comments, so on to Jennifer.
All right, I had two topics I wanted to mention. Both of them are fairly brief. One is the online discussions that Faculty Senate is now running through this Google Groups thing. Those have turned out to be very useful, and I appreciate that we have many people participating. Please continue to do that. Those discussions are guiding the committees and will help us sort out what ought to come to the Senate floor for formal decisions. But I want to point out to everyone, remind everyone, that you cannot look at these online discussions as a private conversation among yourselves, because they are written, and therefore they can be forwarded outside of the group. I don't know of any cases where that's been done. I'm just reminding you that that can happen. And we already have several people from outside of the Senate who have access to this site. So I'm just reminding you that it should be considered a non-private discussion. And the next point is the healthcare issue about the tobacco surcharge. There has been a decision on this at the statewide level. There is now a news item posted in the Statewide Voice. If you go to the statewide website, there's a link there for their newsletter, which is called the Statewide Voice. And the policy that will go into effect is explained there. I want to point out that the main concern that we heard from Faculty Senate the first time this was discussed was that Statewide was proposing that the tobacco surcharge would be applied to one who had a smoker in their residence, which meant if your spouse smoked and you didn't, and your spouse was insured by a different employer, the surcharge would still apply to you. That caused some consternation here. That has disappeared from the policy. It now applies to the insured employee and any insured dependent. Okay. If you want further details, please do check out that story in the Statewide Voice.
Any questions for Jennifer? All right, we're going to go ahead and skip over the chancellor for the moment and get the comments from our provost, Susan Henrich.
Good afternoon. Bring the mic over closer. I mainly want to talk about our next round of accreditation. It's a little daunting, especially for those of us who spent a fair amount of time working on the last cycle of accreditation, to realize that we're already in the new accreditation cycle of 7 years, and that we have another report due next fall. That will be a relatively shorter report. However, it deals with, it will include our revisions, if any, to our institutional mission and our core theme, and will basically set the stage in terms of planning and in terms of objectives and indicators for the next seven-year cycle. And we hardly ever talk about accreditation without looking for volunteers to do something. So this is also a request for anyone who is interested to contact Dana Thomas and volunteer to be on this first-year accreditation steering committee. This task, if you like, and if you get really, really involved and excited about accreditation, we would almost certainly be happy for you to continue. But this particular task is for the first year and for that initial phase. And so if you just want to try it out and see what it's like and learn a little bit about accreditation, this would be a good opportunity without necessarily a long-term commitment, although long-term commitments are nice too. So consider that and contact Dana if you are interested. Meanwhile, we've been beginning our work with the new mission statement and the core themes and any revisions there that may be necessary. The Cabinet has entered into some discussions, and the Chancellor has started some sub-cabinets focusing on things like academics, research, community campuses, and so forth, and some of those groups have also discussed this. But we're not, of course, going to be leaving the Senate out of the process, and at one of the meetings it was decided that the Senate Administrative Committee will be responsible for looking at the draft mission statements and or drafting versions of their own, and also making suggestions about core themes, objectives, and indicators. And that will be a little bit later stage in the process. So I expect that there will be various opportunities, not quite set up yet, because this is something we're going to be working on over the course of the next couple of months. But there will be opportunities for you to have input into the processes of developing the mission and core themes, and you will be ultimately, as a Senate, also asked to approve them. Now, I'm not anticipating, although, of course, everything is on the table at this point pretty much, but we're not really anticipating a revolutionary change in either our mission statement or our core theme. Some of them seem relatively apparent that need to be included. We're a university. We educate people. We are a very active research institution leading the nation and even the world in some fields. so we're not going to be leaving that idea out, and so forth. So many of these things haven't changed and won't be changed in terms of how we express our mission and core themes. But on the other hand, it's the exact wording of these things can either make everything abundantly clear and easy for us to understand what we are as an institution, or we can word them in such a way that everything is not very clear and that we don't achieve a mutual understanding of who we are and what we're doing as an institution. And that's probably the greatest value of this development of the mission and core themes. It's not so much exactly how they turn out, but how we communicate among ourselves what's important to us and where we want this institution to go. Now, in terms of the old mission statement, which had a variety of good points, it also had and has a variety of things that we might want to change. For one example, it's kind of redundant. Alaska, the North, various versions of that, the Arctic, appear, I think, 5 times in the current mission statement. Well, that's a little repetitious. Maybe we could kind of edit that down so it's a little bit shorter. Another issue that's been identified with the mission statement is it doesn't necessarily really show that we have a community campus mission, community college mission. It sounds like the mission statement for almost any research university except for the emphasis on the circumpolar north and the Arctic. So should we change our mission statement to better reflect that important part of ourselves? So those are some of the things that have been discussed in the group so far. One fairly general area of agreement is that we want a relatively concise mission statement. The catchphrase is, does it fit on a T-shirt? Well, I guess it depends on the size of the T-shirt. But we do want one that ideally people will be able to remember, or at least one that is reasonably easy to read through quickly and say, wow, okay, yeah, that captured what we are as a university. We once had a mission statement, I think, that ran to some 800 words. This was years ago. That really didn't help anybody very much because nobody read it after they finished writing it just that once. In terms of the other discussions that have gone on so far, some of the things that seem to have surfaced as things that we definitely want to include in a new mission statement is a focus or emphasis on the North, the circumpolar North, or something like that. Some acknowledgement of the community campuses, or perhaps vocational or workforce education, things like that. There's also, though, a definite desire to include the research, teaching, and service in some words that were included in our past mission statement. That group of words is really encapsulates what a land grant and also a sea grant and, to a certain extent, space grant, although that's a little bit different, what those three kinds of a university are. On the other hand, less interest in including the land, sea, and space grant catchphrase directly in the mission statement, although it might appear in an introductory section. So those are some of the things that have been said about the mission statement so far. Haven't really gotten to a final decision by any means because this is an ongoing process, but some of the ideas to think about. In terms of the core themes, many of us were fairly happy with the core themes that were established, but there were some things that people weren't quite satisfied with and that we just kind of had to compromise on because the timescales were relatively short. One is the discover theme. There is some feeling in some areas that the research needs to, because it's such a big part of what we do, that it needs to be called out in so many words in a core theme rather than discover. On the other hand, we really understand that there are other kinds of creative and scholarly activity that research may not exactly capture. There is some thought that maybe we should just broaden the definition of research to include those areas of scholarly endeavor. Whether people will agree on that, I'm not sure. So that's something to think about. How can we express that part of the university in a way that encompasses everyone that's engaged in those kinds of activities? The other area that received a fair amount of discussion is exactly how to express our commitment to communities in the core theme. We have two core themes right now, connect and engage, that express that. Are they somewhat redundant? Should they be brought together or not? Should we retain two themes? And if we do, how do we distinguish them and make them different enough to really stand strongly as two different core themes? There was also discussion of expressing our core themes in an Alaska Native language, or perhaps several Alaska Native languages, and or perhaps translating the core themes into all of the important Alaska Native dialects and languages that exist around the state of Alaska. So that would be one way of expressing our connection to Alaska Native communities across all of the core themes, rather than focusing that connection in one theme. So those are some of the ideas that have been talked about so far with the core themes. Won't take up a lot of time here at this meeting because I think that this is mostly the kind of discussion that goes better in some smaller and less formal groups. But I do encourage you to get involved in developing both the mission statement and the core themes, and to give us your feedback, your input. What would you like to see in these, and how would you like to see it expressed? So that's all I'll say for now, and I see our chancellor has come. So,
are there any questions for the provost? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move on to chancellor's comments. Chancellor Rogers.
Well, thank you, and I want to begin by building just a little bit on what Susan just said, but talk a little bit about accreditation. We've received the draft accreditation report for comments, essentially to fix any errors of fact, and then that goes to the Northwest Commission for their meeting in January. So while we can't release it yet, what I can say is it's a spectacular report. The evaluation team recognized what the level of effort that all of you, the departments put in, and really the quality of response in a brand new process that I think they had a little bit of frustration with, because doing this around themes instead of around resources and capacity is a very different way of looking at accreditation. So it was essentially inventing a new process and going through a 7-year process in 2 years, and we did it with flying colors, thanks to all of you. The three recommendations that came out that were in the public session 2 days after your last meeting are all things that I think were comfortable. Yes, those are okay, and the commendations were really strong. And you know, ultimately, it came down to the work of a large group of people in order to get to what they felt so comfortable with. And so I just want to begin by thanking everyone here. We'll see if the full commission adopts the draft or if they make any changes. We'll see the second week of January, and you'll have it in time for your February meeting. But that, of course, with the new process, we don't get any break. We immediately jump into the next round. And I think the points that Susan has made about mission statement and core themes, under the new process and really with the way we are leading and the directions for this institution, the mission and the core themes are going to set the directions over the next six to 7 years until we go into the next accreditation review cycle. And so the work, while coming right on the back of just having done it, seems like do we have to already? The answer is yes, and it's important. It will set the tone for what kind of an institution we have. I think the other really important thing that we're doing, that you're doing this year, is the core curriculum review. That's, you know, it's been, as we discussed it at a prior meeting, it's been 20 years. The core curriculum for what students need to be successful in the 1990s is probably not the same as what students need to be successful in this century. And I think we will have some external pressure on this one. One of them, I think I've already mentioned, which is the board is concerned about number of credits. We're above their minimum in terms of number of credits for core. And so I hope we're able to come up with some flexible ways that still encompasses the breadth of learning and knowledge and critical thinking that we want students to come out with, but does it in 34, 35, 36 credits instead of 38 or 39 credits. And I think there have been some creative ideas put forward and commend those to you. I think the extent we can have some flexibility while keeping to what you think is important for a student to come out of in terms of the way she or he thinks, the way that the understanding of knowledge and the human condition, that's all part of what's important to a degree really meaning something. Third and final item I have is budgetary. The Board of Regents met last week, approved the budget request. It was pretty much as the President has submitted it. It now goes to the Governor. This is the time, if there are any particular issues in either the operating or the capital budget that affect you and you have particularly external supporters, we want to get together with Ann Ringstad and try to coordinate messages to the Governor that we want him to support the Board of Regents' request. I think we've got a pretty good shot of the Governor approving the money that's in for pay and the money that's in for utilities and operations and maintenance. And beyond that, it's in part how well we advocate for things like Indigenous Studies, for things like veterinary medicine, for things like the RAP program, for the top priority of advising for students. And each of the separate pieces that go into our operating budget request, we have to convince him and the Office of Management Budget that these are worth doing. Then we have to convince the legislature once we've been through that first hoop. So, if you're involved in any of them, if you haven't already gotten in touch with Ann Ringstad's office to just talk about what will be the best way to reach the Governor, timing is critical. He puts forward his budget request in early December. That's when the legislature gets a shot at. On the capital budget side, a very different request this year from the board, similar in some ways in that deferred maintenance is the top priority, deferred maintenance and renewal of facilities. The big difference is it's the only priority in the budget. And I know for some in engineering that's a bit of concern that the engineering buildings are not in there. The decision is we really need to focus all of the Governor and the legislature's attention on the need to rehabilitate existing facilities. And there's actually a pretty long list of UAF-related facilities. We sort of have a base of about $40 million for the unit, $37 million for the system, that the Governor's promised in prior years that he'll do at least that much. We're trying to get him to do a whole lot more. And the biggest projects in there have to do with portions of the utility operation and with Westridge revitalization, dealing with some of the older buildings on the Westridge. So those are the primary comments I have. I'd be glad to answer any questions that anybody may have.
Does this mean we're going to tear down Gruning and start again?
if I could tear down the Gruning building, and I would do so, but first I want to have a replacement classroom building. For many of you, that's the only place we have available for classes. The next building to be built on this side of campus will be the engineering building. We have designed into that two large classrooms, one for, if I remember the numbers right, one for about 120 students, one for about 60 students, to be essentially right next to, or maybe even on top of, the Scheibel Auditorium. And so sort of it'll connect Bunnell and Duckering. And so the ability to offer more large, some of the larger sections there will A, take pressure off the Scheibel Hall, and B, allow us to move some classes out of Greening. Someday we need a better building than that. The ability to rehabilitate Greening, it has some severe challenges from a heating, ventilating, air conditioning, from an egress, from an accessibility to people with disabilities. I've officed in that building when it was somewhat newer than it is today, and I'm sorry I can't offer better facilities to you yet.
Any other questions for the Chancellor? Nope. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next issue, discussion items. Strategic directions, role of UAF Faculty Senate. Jennifer and I have this one. Okay, strategic directions. I've given you the heads up on this one. This is the president's push to listen to the people around the state about what they think about our university. And so the first push was people outside the university. In spring, the push will be people inside the university. So we will get plenty of opportunity to get input in. But right now, with the listening sessions that are going on, they're going on at a lot of UAF branch campuses. And so what we're requesting is faculty go and listen. And, you know, it's one of those cases where we've got time to get our input in. What we'd like to do is give the community an opportunity to hear, to be able to say their piece without us constantly jumping in and defending ourselves. But we also would like to hear how they go. You know, was the community engaged? You know, would you think it was run well? We'd like to get that feedback into Faculty Alliance to help guide the future listening sessions. So one of the next ones coming up is at Interior Illusions next Tuesday. So I'll be going. If you happen to be around, you might want to go listen. It will also be audio conferenced. You can find all of these listed on the web in terms of where they're going to be. And it's just it's an opportunity for you to report back to us kind of how it's going and whether or not we need to tweak something. In the spring, they'll be doing more meetings with faculty, with staff, really to try to get the what do we think we could be doing better, et cetera. You can also go online and fill out the survey. So if you want to go take a look at what questions they're asking and get some input in, there is a website. It is on your agenda. Feel free to go check in and put your input in that way, too. Jennifer, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Sure.
And, yes, Jennifer pointed out that with the schedule as it is right now, there are two more listening sessions in Fairbanks prior to our next Faculty Senate meeting. December 1st is here at Fairbanks, 4 to 5:30, and it's the it's CTC. And then December 2nd, there's another CTC one from 4 to 5:30. I do not know yet what the difference is between those. I will find out and get back to people on. Oh, Brian says he's got it.
What I've understood from online notices is the Thursday one is really focused on UAF as a whole. It's physically going to be at CTC to make it easy for the community to get there during that hour. The second day, Friday, is really focusing on CTC-related programs and activities. That's my understanding of the way they're trying to divvy it up between the 2 days.
Great. So again, this is an opportunity for the community to get us input. As I said, we'll be, as UAF faculty, we'll have opportunities for input in spring. Are there any questions, Lara?
Have there been any yet?
There have been two sessions so far, one at Eagle River and one at Bristol Bay.
How well were they attended?
I haven't heard back on the Bristol Bay one yet. That was just on Friday. But in terms of the Eagle River, it wasn't terribly well attended, but it was a combination of legislators and community and I believe a regent, some faculty. And we're hoping to get the word out more with these future ones. That one was done in a hurry, and I don't think they got the word out quite as much as they wanted to on some of these future ones. Most of the meetings now they have scheduled to try to match stakeholder meetings at that same campus so that, for example, with the one that was done at this coming up at Interior Illusions, they're having a meeting of stakeholders for interior solutions. So that gets an opportunity to get a bunch of people who are involved in the campus in those listening sessions.
Yeah, Kathy, this is Mike.
Yep.
Todd was just about to say, too, that we, Fuller Cowles was out at our campus, and it was in conjunction with Bristol, with our council, campus council, and it was pretty well attended, and there was pretty good discussion for a few hours here. So the community really took an interest in it, I thought, and I thought it was a good session. Maybe Todd has other things would like to say.
No, Mike, yes, good. We also had at that time a visioning project going on across the Bristol Bay, and there were people, we were fortunate enough, there were people who were able to show up who also were attending the visioning project, and they thought it was important for them to come over and continue dialogue of their community by talking about the what the Bristol Bay and the University of Alaska Fairbanks was offering and what could be in the future. So I think it was good for us.
That's great to hear. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I think he really got a better understanding of the issues out here in rural Alaska. So we were glad he came, and I thought everybody felt really good about the process and about the exercise, really.
Great. Laura?
So where was that announced that this is going to happen? I'm just wondering if I'm so disconnected that I completely did not hear about this, or because this is kind of important. I mean, Jennifer, do you know if the MAP agents know about this to actually advertise it?
We've been talking to the people organizing this about the existence of the MAP agents and the potential for getting them to help. Up to this point, the process is no. I don't know that they've been involved. The process is still actually getting organized. It sounds like the Bristol Bay session was vastly better and more productive than the Eagle River session. So if that's a very good sign.
And in terms of the getting it out there, a lot of it has been, they've been focusing on that community. So we wouldn't hear about a lot of it other than if you've been up to your eyeballs in it like we are, you know that the website that is in the agenda has the list, and it's been getting updated on a regular basis as they firm things up.
So what we're doing is contacting specific faculty at these sites and asking them to go observe on our behalf and then talk to us afterward. And Mike Davis is the one we talked to for Bristol Bay, which is why we knew he was there. But we've also talked to someone for Interior Solutions, and we intend to do the same for the session in Nome that's on December 7th. And obviously we will be at the ones in Fairbanks.
So is there phone conference lines set up that actually take questions? I mean, there's, it's great that there's something in Nome, but there might be communities in the Bering Strait that cannot be in Nome and have some valuable input too.
That was something that I know that Paula Donson, who's the vice president, the associate vice president for academic affairs, who's been working on this, wanted to make sure that rural communities that were not, where people couldn't travel in for the meeting were connected and that we got their opinions. And that's part of why the making sure we also have the online submission forms is to get some of that discussion. But I believe they were trying to set up audio on a bunch of these.
Yeah, I mean, online is great, but if you are sitting somewhere in a hut in Shishmaref, you may not necessarily have that option.
Right. The Faculty Alliance has been pushing on this issue, and my impression is that it's just starting up so quickly that not everything is in place at the first one or two sessions, but we're going to continue pushing on that.
I think the idea of faculty attending to observe is good, but what's more important is that you let supporters of your program, particularly outside the university, know about it. If we get the word out and people who care about the services that we offer come in and say so, that will carry a lot of weight. And so really we're going to need, and I think that the idea of using MAP and cooperative extension to extend that, if we're not already doing that, I made a note because I think we need to. But if you've got particular external supporters of your program, having them come either here in Fairbanks or at one of the others, or participating in the audio session, will make a difference. Sometimes you only hear from the people who complain it's really nice to hear from people, and I know there are a lot out there who are really excited about what you all do.
Any other questions or comments? All right, then let's move on to the next discussion item, which is the Stay on Track program. Jennifer, do you want to lead this one, or should I? Okay, I guess I get this one too. All right, so the Stay on Track program, a bunch of you may have seen flyers. We saw them out eating lunch tables. And it's really aimed for first-time, full-time freshmen who are looking at getting a degree in 4 years. And the whole object is to get them through in 4 years, have them meet with advisors, have them basically take a pledge they'll try to get done in 4 years, and really, you know, do the things they need to do in terms of figuring out what their goal is, how they're going to get there. If you happen to be a first-time, full-time freshman, this is, and your goal is a four-year degree and you really want 4 years, this does help with that particular thing. The problem is that most of our students don't fit in that category. So we want to make sure that in terms of this program, we don't, I think the feeling of the faculty we've discussed is we don't want the rest of the students to feel like second-class citizens. We really want students to know that whatever their goal is, whether it's a certificate, it's one class, it's, you know, associates, or it's a bachelor, but they would like to do it in 6 years and have more of a, you know, college experience and take some fun classes, that we're there for them too. And so in terms of the Stay on Track program, yes, it's good if that's the student's goal, but a lot of students, that's not really what they're doing. And, of course, we know that if you're going to go through in 4 years, you have to take what? You have to take 30 credits per year and, you know, really kind of plow through. And, you know, what are the options for helping students do that? That's something we as faculty should be aware of. You know, we've got summer sessions to help. There are different ways to get the students to that 30 without burning them out. So it's something that is being pushed right now as a way to go ahead and get our students through faster. But, of course, keep in mind we want the students also to have the college experience that suits what they need. Any discussion on this program? Mike.
Kathy, I would just add that one of the ideas for this program came from the fact that full-time status for financial aid purposes is 12 credits. So students kind of come here with the idea that, well, I'm a full-time student at 12 credits. And while that is true for financial aid purposes and for verification of enrollment, 12 credits per semester is not going to get you to a four-year degree in less than 5 years. So it was the discussions initially started as making sure that people were aware of what it really does take to get to a degree in 4 years. And then I think the conversation just sort of spread from there, and it developed quite a bit.
Laura?
How are we dealing with some of these bottleneck forces, like chemistry?
We're praying hard for more funding, at least in chemistry. That is one of the issues, and it's something where I know that, and Paul Lehrer can speak to this, we're working on ways to try to get more students through those particular courses and in the time frame they wanted. We've been trying to encourage students to, for example, see if they could potentially take it off sequence, if they could do that or not. Certain accrediting agencies said, no, they can't. It must be, fall must be, you know, first semester general chem, et cetera. But it is something that is being looked at in terms of course offerings and making sure that if we want the students to get through in 4 years, the courses are offered on a regular enough frequency that actually they can get through. And I know that that's something that Mike Ernest and Mike Sfrega and the deans and directors had them looking at. So it is acknowledged that there are some serious bottlenecks that can interfere with this, and what can we do in order to get around them?
Yeah. I wanted to have a comment and a question, another comment. And I noticed the signs hanging around campus starting last week, and I think that that's an effective way maybe to communicate to the students. And I was just wondering for, you know, the people who designed those flyers, and I saw them on the campus shuttle as well, Is that something that you had students look at also? Do we know that it's visually appealing to students, that it's going to have any particular effect on them? I mean, is it they respond to a certain look, right? And they are kind of very simple flyers, but I just wondered if there was student input into them.
I'm going to turn to Mike because this was all essentially the campaign was all designed in the system office with a little bit of campus advice. I have no idea the answer to that question. Maybe you just...
I would say that there was at least some limited input from students. And the primary groups that worked on this were some volunteers from around the state that worked with the statewide Student and Enrollment Services Office, as well as the statewide office of, what's Kate Ripley's office called?
Public Affairs.
Yeah, Public Affairs. So they did develop it as a joint project, but they got some initial student feedback.
Okay, thanks. And then my second comment was in geology and geophysics, we just sat down recently and put together a flow chart of the order in which students could take classes, or kind of preferred or suggested order in which they could take classes in order to finish a BS in 4 years. And in doing so, we kind of ironed out some of the wrinkles that, you know, you could run into if you do a sequence ordering in a different way. And I just wanted to suggest that if other departments haven't done it, it was a positive experience.
I'll back you up on that, Elizabeth. Chemistry does that for each one of our BS concentrations, where here is your preferred four, and if something gets off sequence, usually it will cost you at least a semester, if not a year. But they know up front, here we have a whole student handbook, which is how do you get through each one, suggested things, suggested flow for each one, and it really does help the students. Having it on your web page where they can pull it up at any point is an awesome thing. Any other comments, questions? Dave.
Perhaps I heard you wrong, but I seem to recall at the last Senate meeting, and indeed I think I heard him one other time, President Pat Gamble said something about putting an emphasis on getting all of our students through in 4 years, that there was some semblance of intolerance for people who wanted to take the 5 or 6 year experience, the greater diversity of college kind of program. And I'm just kind of wondering if something's changed.
Well, I can say from the point of view here of our chancellor has a belief in the it's good to go away, have other experiences, enjoy college, and we may be rebelling.
Let me take that a step further. I think we need a set of messages that go to the majority of our students whose goals are not necessarily to graduate in 4 years, who may have family, may have jobs, are trying to do it, that's okay, that this is Alaska. You know, some people like the trackless wilderness, and so staying on track is good for some, but following one's own path is also appropriate. But we need to make sure for those students as well that we think about the issues of course sequencing, that we think about the issues of financial aid, and we think about the issues of advising so that they know the choices, what the impact is of the choices they make. So if we do all three of those for our part-timers and our less than full-time full-timers, I think then we're serving our students. And that's the message we'll take to enhance the system-wide message that if you're a first-time full-time freshman, you want to get through school as quickly as possible, we'll help you stay on track.
I want to make an answer also to David's question. I think I know where you're coming from with remarks from President Gamble on this topic and related topics. What I'm seeing is that his answers and his comments are often context dependent. Depends on what the focus of the conversation is, or what the focus of what he's trying to explain is. And you do seem to get different views depending on what the specific focus of the conversation is. And so, to my mind, we have an opportunity to influence which one of those becomes the dominant one. Right now, the thinking is somewhat fluid. And so let's try and be clear on what we think the priorities ought to be.
And Stephen, you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you. A tool that would be helpful for me that I know, I feel as if I'm often advising students who are under the mistaken impression that debt is always bad because they're in a media environment which is telling them that. Also in an environment where they think that work is always good. If they graduate without debt and they do it in 10 years, that's going to be better for them than if they graduate in debt within 4 years. I'm not really a spreadsheet master, but I find myself trying to disassuage them of these oftentimes erroneous thoughts, and it's often fighting an uphill battle. And I'm just saying that particular kind of economic information that could be laid out in a way that doesn't look too dry in a county would be quite helpful.
If one thing the Faculty Alliance keeps bringing up, and I think we're going to get more active on this suggestion, is exactly what you're talking about. And the phrase that's been used is something akin to a mortgage calculator, where you can put in variations in a plan and see what the result is in the bottom line. So yes, we agree that would be a helpful tool, something simple to use that gives you a concrete result and you can play with the options.
If you're going that route, the New York Times has an amazing mortgage calculator that actually has a graphical aspect to it, which is not scary. So check it out.
And Ken, you had your hand up?
Yeah. A lot of the metrics that come out are all quantitative. How many students do we have? How many graduates do we have? How many credit hours, et cetera? And many times our students pick that type of attitude up. And we've probably all had students that they get a degree and it really hasn't prepared them for life in their career. And in advising, the first thing I ask the students is, are you preparing for a career as well as to get a degree? And I would hope that we as a university would promote effectiveness of the college experience in addition to simply the efficiency. Because too many of our metrics, they are geared for efficiency, getting students through, getting our numbers up. And I'd hate to have us go to the point where we are basically doing the same thing as a student who is trying to get a grade without worrying about what they learn along the way.
Good discussion. Any other comments? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move on to the next thing, which is the master's degree award ceremony. Now, I know there's been some discussion of this on the on the Google site. Consensus so far, and you guys can tell me if I've got this wrong, seems to be that adding that in as a separate thing is not the preferred method. Maybe adding a little bit more to the main ceremony seems to be, you know, where something like they get the hood thrown on, but the title of the thesis isn't read because that does, you know, certain people don't have thesis titles if you're getting an MBA or something. So a case where we add a little bit to the main ceremony, there's still some more acknowledgement in the bachelor's and also to have them separate from the bachelor's. But so, you know, bachelor's, then master's, a little bit different with the hood, and then PhD with the full title and the please recognize. That seemed to be the sense I was getting. Is that where we are? Laura.
I kind of was curious to just hear from my students on how they would feel about this, and there was this survey that I think your staff would send, but I don't know who sent that around, but there was a survey where students were encouraged to respond if they would attend something like that. And so I sent this to my students and just said, okay, out of personal curiosity, what would you think? And there was each and every one of them wanted that, which I found surprising.
Wanted the hooding ceremony? The extra ceremony. Did I see Laura Bender come in? What did you heard from the students since it was the grad school?
Laura,
could we get you in the microphone since we've got folks online?
Hi, this is Laura Bender from the graduate school. And we did send out a poll to all of our students that are on the graduate student listserv. And overwhelmingly, the response was very positive. There was a few that said, why, I'm not going to go to any ceremony anyway, don't add another one. But the response was overwhelmingly yes. If you offered one, we would be there because we need to be recognized. We want to be recognized for our hard work as well.
Okay.
And God knows, everyone wants graduation to be longer than it is.
Brian's going, not him. Yeah. So if we are going to go ahead and go forward with this, what are the advantages and disadvantages that people see here in terms of, from the point of view of having the separate ceremony, what's good, what's bad, and then from keeping with the full graduation? Dave, dive in.
I'm just a little bit nervous that if we have a ceremony and very few faculty come because they don't really see why, they're already doing commencement exercises, that the graduate students might be a little bit disappointed.
Angry would probably be better. Angry.
Yes.
Mike?
Free beer.
Or alternately, if a lot of people go to the master's hooding ceremony that would otherwise go to commencement and then don't show up at the regular commencement ceremony, it might somehow take away from that ceremony. I don't know how many of those students would actually choose the hooding ceremony over the 3-hour commencement, but some would, I'm sure.
Cecile?
I don't think there's an easy solution to this. I don't think there's an easy, is it on?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an easy solution to this. You just said, if people don't show up to the main commencement, that has an impact. But I've also noticed that the longer it is, the more people start to leave at some point. And to me, that really takes away from the experience that, you know, that people in the audience especially start to leave as their child or whatever has gone through. And, of course, again, as the longer that goes on, the fewer people are going to be sitting there at the end. And I think that would be a shame, too. So it's sort of finding that balance, I think, between sort of having a main event that really does sort of create that sense of community, I suppose, and giving individual subgroups the recognition they deserve. So I don't know. It's a tough one, I think.
Ryan, I know that GAC discussed this. Could you summarize that?
I think my favorite comment there was from my graduate student member of GAC, which was that of all the possible ways to slice and dice to rearrange the graduation ceremony, taking just the master's students out and putting them in a separate ceremony seems a very strange choice. That if you put, I mean, you could say masters and PhD are going to have a hooding ceremony or something special for them. There's not that many PhD students, and it's kind of nice to say, hey, we got PhD students at the main ceremony. Rearranging these things is difficult, certainly. I mean, that was, we definitely got that out of GAC.
Yeah, my impression is that the focus on the masters was because there was a feeling that they were being shortchanged in a way. And that's how this all started.
Yeah.
So were there other suggestions from GAC about how to handle this?
Free beer.
some way to incentivize advisors to actually come to the Thursday evening ceremony, like have an informal get-together of some kind afterwards where it's the students, their advisors, and the chancellor's reception with the ice cream is always really, it's a really good time to sort of interact with people not from your discipline, which is not a chance we get very often.
I don't remember the time.
It did come up. We did talk about that.
I don't remember the time frame, but some of us teach on Thursday evenings in our graduate classes, so we're a little
scheduling
stuck there. And some of our departments have their own ceremony for their graduate students separate from graduation.
When I was at Virginia Tech, we had no problem getting faculty involved with it. The reason why is that faculty were involved. They didn't come in and sit down and 2.5 or 3 hours later get up and walk out. They participated in the ceremony. For instance, after every, as their students were going through, all the faculty from the school, from the department, our departments were a little bit larger there, but we all got up and we went out and personally congratulated students as they came down from the stage. Now, we formed basically congratulatory story line. Well, it was a really neat experience because you had the opportunity, because there's a lot of time there, to talk to the individual students. Now, for the last 10 years, I've heard all kinds of reasons why we can't do that here. But I think that those personal interactions we have with the students, especially in front of the parents and grandparents, that make a difference, and that encourages the faculty to come. Now, have we ever considered doing something like that, or possibly even extending it? Is it possible you could have the master's students, as they come down, be hooded by their advisor at the start of a line of all the faculty congratulating?
I was going to say something, and then I realized I haven't actually been at a commencement yet. So, but it might be effective. So I don't know how commencement works, but if you have everybody together, you know, for the brief, you know, maybe hour-long ceremony with all the, you know, high figures and the commencement speaker, and then break into colleges, where the groups within the college get, you know, the hooding and the names read out loud and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think we've got some good ideas here and some things to continue in terms of discussion. I think we'll probably want to continue this on. I know that the schedulers are getting antsy about whether or not we're going to do this and how we're going to do it. So what I would recommend is on the Google Groups this week, your homework is to give us yays and nays as to whether or not we should have a separate ceremony, if we can make the timing work, for example, a Saturday morning for it, or some other time in order to make it actually kind of fit in the schedule so we're not conflicting with, you know, graduate courses in the evening. If we could find some time that would work for folks where we wouldn't have the conflict, would you be interested in having the hooding ceremony, especially given that you've heard that the grad students kind of like this idea? You know, yay and nay, kind of weigh in it. Talk to your students and, you know, within the week, email me kind of a vote. Are you for it or are you against it?
To add to that, I'll make a suggestion that we list the options that have been proposed so that you all have those in writing to respond to, and then respond to those specific questions. And in there we can list constraints as well. I know there's been a discussion about when the master's hooding ceremony could be held, and my recollection is that Thursday evening might be the only serious time that was discussed, so we'll check on those things, and we'll summarize it in writing.
And the grad school is waving frantically.
Yeah. This is Laura Bender again. Another evening has come up, and that is doing it on Friday evening, because it turns out that this coming Friday evening before commencement in 2012 doesn't have anything scheduled.
Okay,
we're
so that
looking now at being at Friday evening instead of Thursday evening. Part of the issue is that students whose parents are coming in, Thursday might be too early to get parents to come and then have to stay through Sunday. Friday is a better option. There are a lot of issues with having it Saturday morning.
Okay. Mark, could you summarize that and send this to us in writing? And
so
then we'll
can get everything in the writing.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Susan, did you have anything you wanted to add in terms of the UAF mission statement?
Yes. I think I said it all in the
All right. With that, let's go ahead and take a break and meet back here at 2:15, please. And the clock up behind is wrong.
Yeah. I don't know how to solve it. There's only 30 of them.
I know, but so it could be shorter and do it as soon as
possible. Their advisor comes up. I think they read the name.
Gotcha.
They read their name. The advisor comes up. The advisor puts it on.
Depending on.
And if we did the exact same thing, the master's students really would add a lot of time. And just the logistics of getting the, I mean, I think they bring like a PhD advisor or faculty to sit up front or something. Or a master's student.
I got it.
The logistics of doing things for 200.
We know.
Yes, we know.
And the screen is flat.
It's
turns out that she needs to get better about social skills. She's not sharing well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so our homework is that we're supposed to have more play dates.
Over date.
People from
the university. Yeah, just to give her more opportunity.
So,
it's like, wow. Yeah, it is. It's like, wow.
I mean, the teacher.
Oh, I've nosedived
on the back of my
We need to average Laurel and Colleen. No, it's almost the opposite. She gets the four.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's get back to it. Do we have any public questions or comments? All right, hearing none, that moves us on to our guest speaker, Fred Schlitt, Vice President for Outreach and Engagement. Take it away, Fred.
Good, I got a promotion from Vice Provost to Vice President.
Sorry.
That's all right.
It's a Monday.
I can't wait till this check. Thank you for inviting me. I've been here 2.5 years. I was hired by the Provost and Chancellor to give leadership to Cooperative Extension and also to be Vice Provost for Outreach and develop an outreach program for UAF. So I spent my first year and a half working with my Extension faculty and staff in realigning and trying to transform our Extension program to a little bit different kind of program that is issue-based and focused, kind of realigning our faculty, our resources, and our finances. And I can say today in Extension that we've begun that transformation, and I'm really pleased with the direction that Extension's gone. And the reason why we've been successful is I've never been around a group of Extension faculty that I think are any of higher quality and dedicated to citizens as the ones that we have. So I see Deb Jones over there. She leads our 4-H program and does an excellent job. The other reason I got here was to try to create a outreach program for UAF. About a year ago, started trying to identify as many outreach programs as possible on campus. And we've came up with a list of probably over 225 outreach programs. They're scattered all over campus. They're certainly scattered, in some cases they're scattered in other units throughout the state. But the thing that we noticed was in most cases the outreach programs were very K-12 centric and very Fairbanks North Star Borough centric. And that's pretty easy to understand if you look at that. Most outreach programs are NSF or NIH funded, and that's some of their criteria is to be K-12 centric. And in our case, it's a lot simpler to do outreach in Fairbanks and the North Star Borough than it is, say, in Southeast. So my focus has been to how can we move all the great science that we do on this campus statewide, and how can we bring all that great science that we're doing on our campus to communities that have real social real issues, for instance, energy or climate change? How can we bring all this great information and as outreach, and then how can we engage those communities? And so that's the process that we started. About a year ago, we invited as many outreach folks as we knew on campus to a meeting. We drew 12. Well, that wasn't quite what I was expecting, so we had another meeting about 2 months later. We drew 50. Well, now we're getting in the ballpark. And so the third meeting that we had in the spring, we had to change the room location 3 times to get all the people in the room. There were 75. And so there is certainly an emphasis and an interest in working together, focusing and directing our outreach throughout the state and working together as faculty and staff. The other issues that we're looking at is certainly not only the delivery, but how can we deliver these kind of program, our outreach programs statewide. And so one of the things that we've done is we've gone to all the deans. We've talked to most of the leaders in outreach, including Kathy. What are the really needs of faculty? And we came up with an idea, whether it's a clearinghouse or a center, but a place where faculty can go. We can help them develop real solid outreach plans, and then once those grants are awarded, that we can help them deliver that outreach throughout the state. And so that's kind of been our focus. We have two other focuses. One is we certainly want to make sure that students are involved, and so we're beginning the process of making sure that we have service learning. I think Laura Connors is leading an effort to do some work in student learning and service, so we're certainly working in that area. And then the other area is, you know, how do we actively engage our faculty at the university in becoming more outreach-engaged focus? And that certainly is, in my estimation, I work a lot with other land-grant institutions and public institutions in engagement. That's something that certainly in the lower 48 has been framed, but it's certainly a culture. And it's a culture that I can certainly help frame for the Academy and certainly for the Faculty Senate, so we can begin thinking as we go through research projects, how can we engage our communities out in Alaska? So that's kind of the focus that we've been going. We continue to meet, trying to, in subgroups now. The Chancellor in one of his subcommittees, our subcabinets, challenged us to try to identify, do an environmental scan, on how many K-12 programs do we have here on campus that affect just the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And so we've got a committee that's beginning to look at that. So we're really a brand new group working to try to identify a lot of these unknowns, but trying to create a resource so faculty can come and we can work with you to develop outstanding outreach and engagement programs. Questions? Yes, sir.
So I'm curious, are your outreach and engagement mission, is your mission and your group purely to serve people who are grant recipients, or is it outreach in a more general sense?
In general. I kind of define, and every campus defines outreach and engagement different. In a lot of larger land-grant institutions, there are multiple definitions of outreach and engagement. But I have a rather simple one, is that it's we're taking the information that we generate on our campus and move that out into communities where they can use it. Engagement is the process of the communities taking that information and asking questions back to us, so they're engaging us. So that's kind of simple. So doesn't matter the college or the school, we want to be involved in outreach and engagement.
Say, I have a question for Fred.
Steve Brown.
And you thought you were going to get off the hook. If I was a faculty member on campus and I was interested in knowing a community's level of knowledge in a particular area, is that something that the Extension Service could do?
That's a loaded question, Steve. It is certainly, in a lot of cases, Extension has units in 15 places or 15 communities throughout the state, and it's certainly an area that we can assist at. We're willing in extension to work with any faculty, any unit on campus to make that interaction, that engagement with the community and faculty possible. I mean, that's the role of extension, being the land grant. As a land grant institution, extension has that outreach mission.
Well, I guess since you already identified my question as loaded, I was just going to state that the extension agents know the communities they work in very well, and so they could be a resource for helping faculty, you know, figure out where to begin in a community.
Absolutely. And that goes for the president's strategic plan, too. We're actively involved in making sure that we have stakeholders from extension, MAP, and other areas engaged in that process. So they're aware of it, and we're trying to get them to some of those strategic planning processes, as are we try to help make sure that faculty understand that the rich role that an extension agent can certainly make in your research because of our close connections to communities throughout the state.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments here. First of all, I'm in Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. I know the MAP agents well, and you repeatedly referred to the extension agents, and it wasn't clear to me that you were including the MAP in your thinking, and I just want to make sure.
No,
that you
absolutely.
All...
MAP is, we're,
okay.
I hardly do anything without Paula and I talking.
Right.
So MAP is a very valuable organization and that I work with quite frequently.
Okay. The other is to, when you're describing this, I'm not sure if it's the way you're describing it or whether it's the way it's actually playing out. When you say that there have been meetings on campus,
sure.
You've invited people who engage in this, and you talk about people in the room.
Mm.
We have faculty working at other sites who would not be in the room, and so, you know, we have researchers in Juneau and Kodiak. We have campuses in Bristol Bay and Nome. And so I am just checking to make sure that this was a matter of the language you were using and not the actual
It is language, but we do have to be more inclusive of more of our faculty as we go along. What we're trying to do is really get a handle on campus and then broaden out our efforts. But, you know, being the director of extension, I know that it's important to involve all of our faculty who are all over the state, as well as MAP and those units that have units scattered from one end of the state to the other.
Okay. The third comment I wanted to make is that individual faculty on the campus and groups have established relationships with communities and individuals elsewhere in the state. Laura Dean, I know, could give you examples of how some of this works. And I'm just checking again to be sure that your office is cognizant of this.
Yep.
And is aware of the importance of not interfering or overlapping on those,
right,
but actually making use of them instead.
We're trying to serve as a resource. And certainly there's, you know, there probably not a month goes by that I find a faculty doing something out in the state that didn't have a clue. And so that's part of the reason why we want to try to make sure that we have a good environmental scan to try to figure out what are all the programs that are going on from this university out in the community. So we're not overlooking those.
Laura, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I was also wondering what your involvement is with COSI, among others, and so are they involved in this? And a lot of what I hear when I go to some of these communities is that they are sometimes being overwhelmed with scientists that all try to fit in their outreach, and so it's kind of working against what the community needs are.
Yeah, we certainly try to work with different units. I'm on a number of Sea Grant and SFOS committees, and so we're working. COSI is certainly a group that I've worked with before. We haven't specifically worked with them directly in trying to look at the information, but we certainly have developed a partnership and agreement that we have to work together better. And working in communities, I've spent quite a number of trips to Beryl. And what the big complaint that I keep hearing in Beryl is that they literally have 700 to 800 NSF grants on the North Slope. And what happens is those scientists, most of them from the lower 48, come in, do their research, use them as their research associates or assistants. Then they leave, and the community doesn't get the information from the grants or the grants and all the study. And so they're saying, how can we get that information so that we can use it? If it's about fisheries, let's use that. If it's something about nutrition, how can we use nutrition? And so that's certainly a complaint that I've heard many times in Beryl, and I'm sure that is, you know, that's true in other communities in our state. And without question, there are probably communities that are overrun with outreach and engagement activities. We try to be sensitive to everyone, but we're learning and growing as we go.
Actually, Barrow is one of those that is being overrun because a lot of folks
absolutely
think that, that giving a talk in front of the community is serving the outreach need. And I think in terms of dealing with outreach, what we need to figure out is what other ways are there, and how can we educate the rest of the faculty to different ways to involve and give back to community.
One of the ways we're looking at is Beryl is the largest town in or village in Alaska that doesn't have a cooperative extension agent and doesn't have a MAP agent, and so I've been in discussions on how we can create an extension MAP agent that's also an outreach person in town that lives there, stationed there, and begin that interaction with that community.
Oh, you got to be very careful with that because they have their own folks.
Oh, absolutely.
They are quite protective of who they have come in.
Absolutely.
UAF. I mean, they have the Iltiavik College there.
Yeah.
And they have their own outreach niche in the North Slope that's doing a fantastic job.
Absolutely, and I've visited with all of them.
Yeah, Laura, this would be in response to a request from them rather than a suggestion to them.
Right. Yeah, they're saying they need help, and we're trying to see how we can help them and deliver that information so it's...
That they need help.
We had a... North Slope Science Initiative had a community gathering last April and invited the community to come and say, what do you need from science in this community? And that was some of the things that came out very clear.
Okay. Jane, you had your hand up?
I'll talk to Fred later.
Okay. Cindy?
Hi, I've done a lot of work with students, high school students at summer camps and projects, and I hear you talking primarily about the sciences and cooperative extension, so I'm wondering if you're also including the arts in what you're talking about. This campus has historically had some very vital and strong arts outreach programs. Over recent years, they've been, some of them have lost funding, some of them are at a diminished role. So I want to encourage you to keep that in the mix because we have very strong and wonderful arts programs here at the university.
Either the dean or the representative from CLA and even the College of Education has been actively involved in our meeting. So we're trying to be as inclusive as we can. And, you know, from a group of 12, we probably now know of 125 to 130 people that are what we call outreach managers. They manage the outreach part of the program. So, you know, we're finding new things every month about what's going on, and it's all exciting. And, you know, how can we get it more focused and directed? Classic example, we found an instance where four different staff went out and called all the school, the high schools and junior highs in the state to get a list of all the science teachers throughout the state. So we had four different efforts to collect the same information. So, you know, I think it's important that we're sometimes a little more focused than some of our work.
Any other questions or comments for Fred?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just wondering, should we direct people to connect with Sherry, perhaps? Or like, is there one spot where people, if they had...
Yes, Sherry George used to work for Center for Distance Education, and I stole her away. She's very well-connected, very outreach-oriented. And she now works for me as an outreach. And sometimes I need to probably clarify even more that you know, even though I'm the director of extension, sometimes when I say we, I'm thinking about UAF outreach. There certainly is a place for extension in outreach, but there's places where extension doesn't fit what needs to go happen in outreach and extension. So Sherry is given leadership in collecting data and information is probably a good person to contact.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you for coming, Fred. And with that, we'll go ahead and move on to governance reports. Do I have anyone here from staff council? Nope, but I do see I have somebody here from ASUAF.
I don't have too much to report right now. We're kind of working on lots of little things. Can everybody hear me? Yes? No? Okay. So I guess all I really wanted to report was that one of the Senate committees is working on a voter registration day. That will happen sometime in the next few weeks. That's kind of a joint effort between our government relations director and the Senate. So that there'll be posters up around, and I'll try and let the president know. We're also planning on trying to do a legislative luncheon that I would like to have it be kind of a big kind of conference. I'm still trying to figure out what exactly it's going to be and how it would work with everybody, but I'd like to have it be inclusive of staff, faculty, and students, as well as interior delegation for the legislature. That's something that my government relations director is also working on. And then at the last meeting, I was asked what are the kind of the three issues that the students are really concerned about, and I have some trouble actually narrowing them down into issues that the faculty senate might want to hear about. But in general, the students, while there is a lack of organization on the kind of student side of this, one of the real issues is plus-minus grading, of course, since I'm sure all of you probably know how the students feel about that. But it's kind of a general consensus that students aren't really in favor of that. And there's also a big push to work on trying to make sure that advising is consistent within all the departments. We're still working on how we can, how we can necessarily affect or, you know, try and make it better. But I mean, we'll be working with the faculty senate hopefully on that as well. And then there's like parking and food, kind of the typical ones that everybody cares about. But that's about it. Is there any questions? Yeah.
On the plus minus grading issue, can you give us more information about what it is that they're particularly concerned about with that?
This is a tricky question because generally, I hesitate in saying this, but generally students aren't completely aware of what it actually means to have plus minus grading, and it's kind of like one of those hot button things that you say it and students are like, oh, we don't like that. But in general, I think that students feel like it it lowers GPAs. And there's not, I don't have any factual data behind this. It's just kind of what my perception of how the students feel about it, whether or not that's correct, having that disclaimer on there. But they don't necessarily like it because it makes it a lot harder to get 4.0s, things like that. So that's kind of why they don't like it, I guess. Yes?
Is that view universally held among students or concentrated above your among your top students?
Well, it's a view, I was using the 4.0 example just because it's kind of the simplest for me to comprehend on the spot. But I think it's generally held throughout, like, the students that have all sorts of GPAs, I would say, if that answers your question.
Mary? We've been having a discussion about the Stay on Track program. And one of the things that's been said is that it's possible the student senate and student leadership is dominated by full-time students because they may be the ones who have the time to devote to things like that. And so can you give us an idea of how much the priorities you're describing here are brought up by those people versus a broad spectrum of students?
Okay, yeah, that's a fair question. Generally, the leadership within A2AF is, well, this year especially, it's predominantly freshmen because I've appointed about 6 freshmen. The Senate was so empty at the beginning of the semester. And so the majority of the students on the A2AF Senate are full-time. But as far as the Stay on Track program goes, that's a statewide initiative, and I can say very confidently that a lot of the coalition of student leaders we have quite a few non-traditional students on there as well that are not full-time. The issues that I just brought up were on-campus or UAS issues within our campus specifically. And I mean, I guess it's a fair assumption that those would probably be mostly, some of them would be mostly held by students that are full-time. But I think that advising is one that generally all sorts of students are concerned about.
Yes, I just had a question. You said advising consistent in departments, and I'm just curious what exactly you mean by that and what it is that we can do to help be more consistent.
Okay, yeah. What the issue, it's actually a push with the Coalition of Student Leaders as well. It's something that we brought up, and the president has been focusing more on the whole student services aspect of advising, making sure students have access to all the different services they have on campus, like financial aid and business office registration, just stuff like that. But I think from the student perspective, the push is more, especially on this campus, I feel like advising varies between departments. Like the level of, I guess, I don't know how to put this. some departments will have advisors that don't necessarily go as in-depth into the student life aspect of it or the plan, I guess. And this is kind of from my own experience as well. And so I'm not necessarily speaking for the entire student body, but I haven't gotten any cries back from the students that say, no, that's not correct. But I think that it's sometimes a little inconsistent because I've changed between 3 different departments. And I've definitely experienced different levels of, I don't want to say care, but levels of just in general planning, advising, some departments.
I didn't mean to put you on a hot spot. I think I get what you're saying now.
I don't want to offend anybody. That's like
go
why
ahead,
I'm, that's why I'm nervous.
We offend each other all the time.
I know, yeah, it's kind of like this is the one body that I don't want to offend on this subject. But there some departments kind of go more in depth with their advising and look at more of whether or not
I'm going to say quit while you're ahead. So this
what?
Is great. I'm going to say quit while you're ahead. I
oh,
think that's
okay.
Great. So.
All right. Any other questions?
I don't see any other questions, so thank you, Mari. United Academics is, you said you were going to be Stephen?
Yeah, I'm being Jordan for today. So the ORP case, mediation, by the way, I can't answer any questions about this, but mediation meetings were held in early October at the request of the state and University of Alaska. An agreement was reached, but there has been no final sign-off. As part of the agreement, there is to be a joint statement about the settlement, which is at this time overdue. There's also a general membership meeting today from 4 to 5 in Greening 304. For those of you who aren't meetings enough, I'm actually going to be on the panel of that meeting, so if you haven't had enough of me, that's going to be about problems that the union has and what the benefits are for the union going forward. And there's an executive meeting on Wednesday the 9th at 11 a.m.
Okay, he said no questions. So, Jane?
I just wanted to talk about the Joint Healthcare Committee. And the 4 unions, UASC, United Academics, Crafts and Trades, and the firefighters have all agreed that we're going to vote as a block whenever possible. So we're going to meet before every Joint Health Care Committee meeting and try to decide how we're going to vote on it. I think we'll have more, our votes will go further this way.
Any questions for Jane? Nope. Then let's go ahead and move on to members' comments, questions, announcements. First on the announcements is the December 5th Faculty Senate meeting will be in 401 IARC. For those of you who aren't familiar with IARC, it's also known as the Akasofu Building. It's the big, shiny building, the farthest west you can get on campus. So it's attached to the Geophysical Institute, so if you take the shuttle bus up, get off at the GI stop. GI stop is the big brown building with the great big blue dish on top. And then you're going to want to head, as you get out of the bus, to your left into IARC. It's up on the fourth floor. The elevators are probably the easier way to get there. The stairwells are a little hidden. But if you go in the main lobby, you'll see the elevators. Take it to the fourth floor. It's the room right across as you come out of the elevators. So the ballroom's floor is being redone. That's why we can't meet here. So 401 IARC for December 5th. The Accreditation Steering Committee, as the Provost mentioned earlier, we happen to have a vacancy for a Senate representative. This is not the seven-year term that you would be signing up for if you did it through your college, so this might be a way to get accreditation on your workload without getting committed for 7 years. So if you're interested in doing accreditation work or are interested in watching the process get off to the start and seeing how it goes, this would be an excellent opportunity. If you're interested, please let me know. And the other thing is we've got nominations open right now for the Edith R. Bullock Prize for Excellence. The website happens to be on your agenda. Nominate your colleagues for outstanding service, et cetera. So we want to make sure that we have a lot of good candidates. There are a lot of people who are doing excellent things for this university, and we want to make sure that they get recognized. So please take a look there and see if you've got some candidates that should be nominated, and then make sure you nominate them. With that, we've got a bunch of attachments for committee reports. Are there any chair comments on their reports or just chair comments in general that chairs would like to share? Reiner?
Yeah. Curricular Affairs has been discussing this whole issue about incompletes and what we can do to make the system work better. Given that we're out of compliance with BOR concerning I goes to F instead of I goes to permanent I, we thought this would be a good time to also discuss the whole issue of should we be trying to argue for a different time limit on incompletes with the notion that instead of 1 year being the standard, one regular semester after the course has been given an I being the nominal standard with extensions as required. I'd encourage you to contribute to the discussion.
Any other chair comments? Andrew?
As far as the annual activities report, the one that is, this was brought to the Faculty Affairs Committee meeting.
Using the microphone there?
Okay. The annual activities report, the proposed revisions to it, it was brought to the Faculty Affairs Committee meeting that we had, and by Dana Thomas and Barbara Taylor, and we provided some feedback from the Faculty Affairs Committee. I just wanted to be clear, what is attached is the original draft that we were presented with. Last week, Barbara Taylor sent a revised draft that will I'm sure will be in the next agenda for this meeting, and we're wrapping up a period of comment from the Faculty Affairs Committee, and we're talking back and forth about it via email. So I just wanted you to be aware this is the original draft, and there'll be a revised draft coming up. The big change is 5.3 reads undergraduate research or creative project mentoring, and it's kind of a way to track what undergraduate research you've been involved in, or the faculty has been involved in.
Would it be possible to get that the revised one sent out to Faculty Senate so the Faculty Affairs Committee could get comment from any faculty senators that on the current version of it?
Are you ready to do that, Andrew?
I think so. I was going to wrap it up at like noon tomorrow, our internal comments, and then I could forward it along and have it.
All right. We'll wait for a resolution from Faculty Affairs.
Dave?
And when you do send it around, would it be possible to identify the changes so we don't have to go through the whole thing and try to remember from the last time we did it what's different?
Right. The changes are highlighted. you can see them in gray here, and I'm sorry if I didn't. In the electronic document, they come out as yellow, but here they're shaded in the attachment.
Okay, my eyes are getting old. Okay, all right.
Any other chair comments?
Yeah, Ryan, you were going to do one about filing graduation for international students.
So we have a new policy on graduate student completion. It's actually our official new policy, as far as I understand. So the official policy is that you do the defense. A 2-month clock starts as soon as your department head signs the report on project defense paperwork. The student's degree is at that point complete, according to the International Programs Office. Their thesis is not necessarily deposited yet, right? So, in fact, if you sign the forms on the day of the defense, which apparently is the policy in a lot of departments, then you may actually be making serious difficulties for international students. There are ways around this. For example, if your degree is complete, you can still have an optional practical training, the OPT, which is more paperwork and an additional sort of hassle for international students to go through. If your international students sign up for an in-class course, right, an actual in-person course at the that's required for the degree, then their immigration eligibility extends until the end of the semester for that course. But this is just an FYI. In computer science, at least, we do not sign the paperwork until the thesis advisor is actually happy with the thesis. And that's the point where we actually sign the report on thesis defense paperwork. So just an FYI on a new policy that's out there. And we're going to try and write something up and get this information out to people.
Just a point of clarification, Ryan. So we typically sign the report on defense if the examination was successful, but we might not sign the thesis cover pages until we're happy with the thesis. Where does that fall in your...
Unfortunately, the cover page was not what was chosen as the completion of the degree, and it was the report on project defense. So that's the policy we got right now. So, I mean, actually, one option would be for the Faculty Senate to say, we're unhappy with this, we'd like something else. This is a complex problem because we have to negotiate with essentially the Department of Homeland Security is enforcing federal law for this. The Faculty Senate, we could say, oh, we really want X, Y, and Z. If that violates federal law, then that's not going to be UAS policy. And the administration is not going to actually make that happen, which is good. So our role in this as Faculty Senate is to give advice. And we started this process last year, right? And I think we gave a whole lot of advice, possibly more than we even wanted on this problem.
This is an improvement over what used to be the policy, right, which was something like 2 weeks?
The previous was you do the defense, 10 days after that, you're done. And typically students are not done at that point.
Any other comments, questions, concerns? Any comments, questions, or concerns in general from any senators? Hearing none, I vote we adjourn. All right. We're out of here early. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to directly. Yeah.